The Lance Roberts Show. It's money, markets, life. Now, it's The Lance Roberts Show.
Good morning. It is Monday as we get this new week underway and get ready to wrap up the month of August. Kind of hard to believe here in the second half of August. Kids finally back in school, and actually more school starting today for young kids. So around the country today is a lot of trying to get them going. But, you know, that means a couple of things, of course, more traffic back on the freeway. So make sure you watch school zones as well as just be prepared. There's going to be more traffic out today than we've experienced summer. You know, I love summers, like, you know, a lot less traffic. But I also enjoy back to school because kids need to go back to school. So and that's about all I can think of. So this weekend, my wife and I went and saw the Texans play. We went to the football game, watched them play Detroit Lions. Mm-hmm. It was a snoozer.
What did you expect?
Yeah, I know, right? But of course, you know, as we leave there, they've got traffic shut. They've got like major freeway shut down, 610 shut down, and other areas.
Oh, yeah.
For this construction thing. It took us like an hour and a half to get home from the game. It was just, it was almost like not worth going.
So. Did no one know that there was A, going to be a game, or B, they were going to do some construction this weekend?
Exactly.
You know?
Anyway, but it all worked out fine.
Yeah.
We had a good time. So
West Ham Houston Tollway was foobar all weekend, too.
It was terrible. That's the way we were going, too. So it was terrible. Anyway, but that was that. So, of course, over the weekend, we wrote the newsletter, which talking a little bit about this inversion of the yield curve. There's a lot of people that have been talking about last week saying, oh, my gosh, the yield curve's inverted. It's recessions, headlines everywhere. And the reason, of course, the media is, you know, really picked up on this a lot lately because they figure out that, well, if there's a recession, Trump will get reelected. So they're really pushing out this whole recessionary headline story. But there is some truth to the fact that a inverted yield curve does signal recessionary pressures because it affects the borrowing cost of individuals, right? And so there's this assumption that low rates are good for the economy, but low rates aren't necessarily good from the standpoint of spurring economic growth. Low interest rates are a function of economic weakness. And so we went through a good bit of explanation this weekend in the newsletter. So if you go by the website, realinvestmentadvice.com, just click on the newsletter link. We go through a good bit of analysis about the idea of a yield curve and recession. And, you know, it's interesting, over the weekend, Larry Kudlow and, of course, Peter Navarro, which are two of the worst economists on the planet, talking about they don't see a recession anywhere. Well, a couple of reasons is that, A, like I said, they're probably two of the worst economists on the planet. But second is that they, of course, have a bias to make sure that the economy, at least, you know, the message from the administration is a positive one. But, you know, if we take a look at what's going on with a lot of the economic data, it is certainly concerning. Freight indexes, as well as transportation indexes, others all point to a much weaker economic environment currently. And most of those areas that are being most impacted right now in terms of downward pressures are areas that are directly exposed to tariffs, right? Agricultural areas, et cetera, all being directly impacted by this trade war. So we've got an article out this morning that we're going to go into a good bit of detail on, talking about the trade war in particular. We just wrote this over the weekend. It's out on the website now, realinvestmentadvice.com. But we're going to go through this and talk about, you know, where, you know, go back a little bit. Let's talk about where we started in trade, where we are now, and then what this potentially looks like over the course of the next year or two, because heading into the 2020 election, this is going to be the key driver. Right, it's going to be whether or not the administration can actually get a deal done on trade, and whether or not the economy is going to hang in there long enough for the actual election to occur. Because again, one of the biggest problems with getting reelected, since most most people vote by their pocketbook, right? It's how they feel economically, and if the economy does slip towards a recession, then that is going to be problematic for reelection chances, and particularly in areas that are affected by trade, because the trade in particular affects, and when you talk about agricultural products, et cetera, are the Rust Belt states that were big supporters of Trump during the last election. So this is going to be very important for the upcoming election. So from that angle, I certainly won't pay attention to it. But economically, your job, your paycheck, those are all part and parcel of what's happening here. There's a big pickup here. We're going to talk about this a little bit later in the show today, but there's a large pickup in the number of oil and gas companies now starting to file for bankruptcy. So again, this is kind of the impact of what's going on kind of underneath the surface. Futures are pointing up this morning, though, and because of comments about trade over the weekend, the Trump administration came out and said, okay, semiconductor companies, you can continue to sell products to Huawei until, for another 90 days. We're going to extend it on out. We'll talk about why we keep getting these extensions of tariffs. But on the back of that kind of trade relief, of course, also comments from President Trump, as well as Larry Kudlow and Peter Navarro, that they don't see a recession anywhere. Everything's great. Don't worry about it. It's all good. Futures are kind of pointing up, hoping again, and this is kind of we live headline to headline, but hoping for a trade deal, right? Are we going to get this trade deal done? Yes, we're working towards it. We're going to have talks. We're going to do this. It's all great. But the algos, right, that are driving the majority of the trading is every time there's a comment about positive comment on trade, they start buying stocks. So futures are pointing up. But we talked about this weekend in the newsletter, saying there's a real possibility here that we'll get a rally this week back towards these kind of this previous resistance level to 50-day moving average. And the reason is because on a real short-term basis, the markets had gotten oversold. So we're now starting to see this kind of oversold bounce in the markets, and we said this could last a little bit longer. A couple more days of positive upside, certainly likely here. We put in some long positions and portfolios on Thursday of last week specifically for this bounce, and probably we'll wind up taking these off here in the next couple of days. But from a trading perspective, there is some upside on a short-term basis. But the market is in the process of a correction that can very well continue through September. So don't get too excited here. We've got to get above the 50-day moving average before things start to really kind of change here. We also have to change some of our signals right now are on sell signals on a variety of levels. So we've got to turn those around as well in order to say, okay, now it's time to add more exposure to equity portfolios, et cetera. Got a lot of work to do before we get to that point. So be a little bit careful here about jumping in. Don't worry about chasing the markets today. Again, this is kind of just an oversold bounce. The bigger issue, of course, on the market is the fact that we've been going through this topping process now for almost 18 months. Where we are currently is about where we were on an inflation-adjusted basis. We really haven't made any progress since the January highs of last year. So, again, it's been a year and a half of really not making any progress here, but a lot of volatility. And for a lot of people, they're just kind of recovered back from what they lost in December of last year. So a lot of people forget that we had a big correction last year, about 20% from the highs. But again, the risk here, a little bit elevated here. And we're kind of living day to day on this trade issue. So if something goes wrong, it could impact the markets fairly quickly. So be aware of the risk. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We're going to talk a lot about trade today and what's going on with that. Don't go away. You're listening to the Lance Roberts Show right here at realinvestmentadvice.com.
Get daily investment news you can use, delivered at the speed of the internet. Sign up for Lance's newsletter now at lancerobertshow.com.
Speaking of how money works and how to make the most out of Social Security, we do lunch and learns here at our office. And on September 4th, that's the Wednesday at 12 o'clock, we're doing Social Security basic rules and claiming strategies. This is one of the more seminal, basic, but important lunch and learns because all we focus on are those basic rules and claiming strategies for Social Security. So if you're thinking about taking Social Security or you're a couple of years away, whatever it is, we provide lunch. Just go to realinvestmentadvice.com, check out the events calendar, and sign up.
And welcome back. So it's 6:18 this morning as we kind of get things underway. So talking here a bit about, the impact of trade and economics and what's going on, because, again, we kind of wrote about this over the weekend talking about the yield curve. And there's a lot of headlines out about the yield curve. What does it mean? What does it mean?
most of the analysis is don't worry about the yield curve because it really doesn't matter. There's no recession in sight. And so in this weekend's newsletter, I go through quite a few charts to kind of lay out the case of why the yield curve is important and what it says about the economy. Now, one thing here is important is that it's not the yield curve being inverted that pretends an economic recession. It's when the yield curve reverses and it uninverts. That's when your recession is actually on top of you. Why is that? Well, that's when the Fed is starting to aggressively cut rates. So, you know, everybody points back to 1995 and they go, well, the Fed cut rates back in 1995 and we didn't have a recession for four more years. Well, first of all, we were just coming out of a recession in 1991. So we were only about 3 years into an expansion when the Fed cut rates. And they were cutting rates to kind of offset the risk of what was happening in the economy, right? We had long-term capital management. We had Asian contagion, Orange County, Friday, and so forth and so on. And so the Fed was a little bit worried about, you know, making sure there was enough liquidity in the markets to kind of offset some of these issues. So they lowered rate once in 1995, but the yield curve was nowhere near being inverted. And then in 1998, 99, the yield curve actually inverts and the Fed starts to aggressively cut rates, and then 2000 comes and there you go. And that's the only case out there, really, where the yield curve's inverted and the Fed's cutting rates at the same time that was kind of an anomaly. The rest of them is, you know, kind of pretty much show you that when the yield curve inverts, there's a recession fairly close behind. And because of that, the Fed is aggressively lowering interest rates. So this is why you got to be careful with averages. Right, the average is skewed by that one period in history from 1995 to 1999, from the Fed's first rate cut to the actual recession. So it skews that data. So this is always the problem in the media, is that we look at things like we look at averages, right? The average, you know, time from point A to point B, the average of this, the average of that, and you know, you take a look at average returns, right? The average returns in stock prices are heavily skewed by just a few periods in history where you had massive run-ups. The majority of the other times, returns were a lot lower for individuals, which goes to show you why a lot of people just don't really make that much money in the markets, because using averages really kind of obfuscate what's going on in the overall economy and the markets and everything else in life, right? If you have just think about it this way. So I was telling you I went and saw the football game this weekend. So we've got one really good player on a football team, and he's just a superstar, right? He's the guy. He makes all the touchdowns. He does everything, right? He's the one guy that nobody else on the team really does anything. This one guy does everything. But when you average out the team, right, because he's so good and everybody else is kind of mediocre, the average is higher than what is really going on with the team. And it's the same thing anything in life. Whenever we have one thing that is skewed to an extreme, it kind of obfuscates what's happening with the rest of the economy, markets, sports teams, whatever it is. So, you know, it's a good example when we talk about wealth, right? I was reading an article over the weekend. I'm going to write an article about this here very soon. But Rex Nutting was writing a weekend and says, average debt-to-income ratios are low across the board. Man, very low. So there's really no worries about, you know, the debt issue. The fact that, you know, we've got record debt doesn't really matter because debt-to-income ratios are very, very low. Well, the problem is it's heavily skewed by the people in the top 10% of the economy that have a whole lot of income but not a lot of debt. And the bottom, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80% of the economy has a lot of debt and not enough income. So it's very skewed by this one segment. You've got to strip that out to get a better picture of what's happened. So that's when you start looking at medians and try to get some actual data. But when we talk about the yield curve and the impact on the economy and economic growth, you know, we start using these averages. Well, the average time from the time the yield curve inverts to the recession is 22 months on average, or whatever the number is. Well, one, that's skewed by one period in time that had a very long period. The second thing is that the growth rate of the economy was substantially higher at every other point in history. So to go from 6% to negative takes longer than going from 2% to negative. Going from 4% to negative to zero takes longer than 2% to zero. So right now we're at 2%. So it's going to take, if the economy was growing at 4% previously and it took 14 months to get to a recession, well, a 2% growth is going to take half the amount of time, right? So again, this is the problem when we start, the media just throws out these numbers. You've kind of think about these things in context to where we are today. So this is important to pay attention to because it has a lot to do with employment, your job, your family, your wealth, the money in your 401k plan. You know, it's all good for today, and there's nothing wrong with the markets today. And again, this is, where we are. We've got a lot of momentum in the market. The market's kind of hanging on to every little concern or comment about trade. So, I wrote in this weekend's newsletter, do you love volatility yet? Because we've had a lot of it lately. And of course, the media is hanging on to every action every day. So markets are up today, everything's good. Tomorrow the market's down, well, the recession's here. So you've got to kind of weed all this stuff out and start looking at where we are, how much risk do we have in portfolios, and more importantly, what are you prepared for potentially what's coming down the road? Now, are we going to have a recession? Absolutely, positively, yes, there will be a recession. When? Nobody knows. Could be next month, could be next year, could be 2 years from now. Nobody knows for sure when the recession will start. And here's the bigger problem. Because we revise the data that we currently see today. So again, the latest economic report comes out, says GDP is growing at 3%. I'm just throwing out a number. Well, that's the number we think it is today. Next year, they'll revise that data. So we'll find out next year, and we just saw this with the revisions on GDP just a couple of months ago, that the economy really wasn't growing at 3, it was growing at 2. Well, 3 years from now, they'll revise that data again. And then we'll find out that we were actually in recession. So this is always the problem with economic data, is because the data that we see today, the things that we talk about on the radio, the media, the TV, whatever, that's the data that we have to date, and that's a guess. It's a guess at best. And we won't know more about it until about a year from now. And this is why we don't find out about recessions till well after the fact. In December of 2007, there was no recession in sight. The economy was growing at about, 2%. Employment was good. Retail sales were great. It was Christmas. A year later, we find out that December of 2007 was when the recession started. And, of course, in 2008 was the financial crisis. That's what I'm saying. When you look back in history, it's very easy to see things like, well, yeah, that was obvious, right? There was clearly a recession in December of 2007. Well, not really. And this is the point that we bring out in this weekend's newsletter. I encourage you to read it because I've got a lot of data in there about where we are currently versus where we've been in the past. Whether it was December of 2007 or December of 1999, there was no recession in sight. The economic data was all positive, right? We don't know about the recessionary data until after the fact. So this is why we have to look at other things that are going on in the economy to try to determine where we are. This is why we look at things like freight indexes. We take a look at things like transportation. We take a look at issues like bankruptcy filings, et cetera, because that's real-time data that tells you about what's really going on in the economy and what's really happening on a real-time basis. And we overlook this stuff because it's not real mainstream stuff. And when you start talking about things like the Cass Freight Index or the Baltic Dry Index or other than copper, everybody goes, boring. Who wants to know about that? Well, the problem is that's real-time data. That's what tells you what's happening. So, when we start talking about your life, your family, your jobs, these type of important things that are important to each of us. I mean, even if you don't have money invested in the markets, that's fine. Do you have a job? Well, yeah. Well, you'd like to keep your job, right? So, pay attention to that because this is kind of what tells you. So at least you have some understanding about what to be preparing for. The problem for most, what happens with most individuals and why they get caught in a bad situation is because they're just living life day to day, just trying to, pay the bills, raise their family, these type of things. And they kind of just hope for the best. And so we don't prepare. We live paycheck to paycheck. We run up too much debt. And then something happens in the economy. It's like, We never saw that coming. And, of course, they're not prepared for it. So there are definitely signs that there are stresses in the economy that are rising. Part of that stress is coming from trade, which we're going to talk about next. And we got an article about trade out today on the website. It's talking about the trade war specifically and what the problems are that we're experiencing. And can we get a resolution to it? We'll talk about that when we come back from the break. It's on the website now. It's called The Trade War. It's on the website, realinvestmentadvice.com. I'm your host, Lance Roberts. We'll be right back.
Want a longer talk with Lance about your money? Request a personal one-on-one at LanceRobertsShow.com.
Speaking of how money works and how to make the most out of Social Security, we do lunch and learns here at our office. And on September 4th, that's the Wednesday, at 12 o'clock, we're doing Social Security basic rules and claiming strategies. This is one of the more seminal, basic, but important lunch and learns, because all we focus on are those basic rules and claiming strategies for Social Security. So if you're thinking about taking Social Security or you're a couple of years away, whatever it is, we provide lunch. Just go to realinvestmentadvice.com, check out the events calendar, and sign up.
Get your motor running. And welcome back to the show. It's more 6:33 as we kind of get things underway on this Monday. Getting ready to wrap up the month of August, heading into the, is it the end of summer, technically? You know, when are dog days of summer? August, right?
Depends.
So,
We're there.
Yeah, so dog days of we're summer there. Is August. September, yeah. You're winding down the dog days of August. Yeah. Okay, I was just trying to.
No respite from the heat until the middle of October,
That was Dustin Hoffman, right? Dog days of summer?
It could be.
Or was it Al Pacino?
Pacino.
It was Pacino.
Dog days.
Right. Dog days, yep.
Yeah.
Old movie about a bank robbery.
Yeah.
You have to go watch it.
Google.
Is it Google? So, you know, I try to get my kids to watch these older movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, and my wife and I were sitting around this weekend, and there was this, what movie was it? I can't remember what it was now. And it was one of the, you know, these movies that we grew up with at the time. It's kind of like Star Wars, right? The original Star Wars, with Luke Skywalker Princess Leia.
Yeah.
You go back and watch that now. And of course, you remember at the time, you know, you went to the theater and it was, you know, Lucasfilms and the THX intro. It was like, wow. And of course, the special effects were just, we moved away from tinfoil antenna and that type of stuff. It was like.
And puppet strings.
Exactly. Moved away from all that. This was like next gen stuff. And now you go back and look at it and go, man, that was cheesy. So, you know, the stuff you have now is just, you know, just totally amazing. It kind of takes away from it now. You go back and look at old movies, but.
Well, now more and more, the movies are computerized.
Right.
There's very little live action going on in these action-adventure films.
There's actually, and talking about that, there's a movie out right now. It's on cable. I think it's on paper, on demand, called Alita.
Ah.
And it's an interesting movie from the standpoint. So, I mean, if you're into, you know, kind of where technology and things are going. Mm-hmm. It's an actual cross between live action and CGI.
Yeah.
And the CGI is so well done that you almost can't tell the difference between the live action and the CGI. It's pretty incredible. But that's kind of where, you know, eventually, you know, and actors need to kind of quit being such, you know, kind of...
Divas?
Yeah, that wasn't exactly what I was thinking, more of the word, you know.
I know what you're thinking.
Of a different word.
Yes. It begins with a different letter.
Yeah. First letter of the alphabet. But, you know, you've got a job that very rapidly is going to be replaced by, or can be replaced by, animation and computer-generated graphics. And again, you know, there's technology now where they're overlaying people's images on top of other people, you know, passed away. That have passed away, they can actually bring them back and artificially, you know, bring them back to life. So, you know, your job isn't that secure. Everybody's like, well, I'm an actor and I have a special talent. No, you can read some lines. That can be done.
And nobody really cares what you think.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Just saying. So, yeah, but no, it's truly pretty amazing, you know, where technology is going.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's really not what I want to talk about this morning.
But it was fun.
Yeah, of course. So talk a little bit about trade. So the markets have been living, we've talked about this before, is that, you know, the markets have kind of lived from 1 month to the next by trade headlines. It's either been the Fed or what's going on with trade. The markets are up 300%-ish since 2009. So we've had a big, big increase in the financial markets. But corporate profits after tax, as reported to the government, this is across all industries, not just the S&P 500, are at the same levels they were in 2011. So profits aren't really growing for companies. They haven't grown since 2011. But yet the stock market is up because of anticipation that things are going to get better, right? We're always hopeful. We're always optimistic. You know, glass is always half full, you know, half only half empty, right? Whatever it is. Which, what's the optimistic side? Half full or half empty?
Depends. The optimistic side is you have a glass.
I have a glass. There we go.
Yeah.
And I can fill it up. So the idea is that simply, you know, things are always going to get better. And look, we're always optimistic about things. Now, the problem with the trade war is that Trump has now gotten himself into a bit of a pickle, so to speak. This was first evident at the G20 summit when he backed off the impact of the trade restrictions with Huawei, which is the Chinese kind of mobile phone company. Huge company. We sell a lot of product to Huawei, chips, circuits, etc. And Trump came out at that at the G20 summit and said, well, we're going to lift restrictions on the sale of product to Huawei because, well, nobody realized how much we sell to them. They're very important. Well, we all kind of realize this. Markets definitely realized it. And that's why they were selling off companies like NVIDIA and Micron and others that have a direct link to selling products to Huawei. And so as semiconductors were collapsing, phone calls were being made to the White House saying, hey, stop this. This is not good for us. You need to back off and let us sell our products. You're killing our profit margins. And this administration is keenly attuned to corporate leaders. That's where the focus of this entire administration has been. It really hasn't been on the individuals. This has been about supporting corporations. When we had tax cuts for corporations, not really individuals, this is why we had, you know, a lot of concern and talk about trade right after the election. Remember the whole thing about bringing jobs back to America? It's all about companies. So the focus of this administration, and I'm not saying that's right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm just saying the focus of this administration has been on supporting companies. And the idea is that by focusing on the corporations, then that will trickle down to everybody else, right? So if I give corporations a tax cut, that's going to give them more money. So they're going to go hire more people and they're going to people wages. Didn't really happen, but that was the idea. Instead, they used the money to buy back shares, right? Boost their stock price. So when the trade war kind of went awry and turned out not to be so easy to win. See, the original assumption by the administration was trade wars are easy to win. We just simply throw a tariff on them. They're going to buckle from the economic pressure, and then we'll get our way, and it'll all be done. You know, bing, bang, boom, done, right? Trade war's over. We win. So turns out trade wars aren't so easy to win. And we talked about this from way back when. But so as soon as the impact of Huawei came into place, he backed off of that. Now, China hasn't done anything, right? They haven't bought more agricultural products. In fact, they put a ban on agricultural products. They're not really moving in one direction or the other right now. Not really, you know, they're willing to talk, right? You want to talk? Yeah, we'll sit down and talk. It's what we do. You want us to do something, that's something different. But we're willing to talk to you all day long. Keep the thing going. So he then comes out and says, okay, well, China's not doing their thing. They're not buying products like they said they would. They reneged on their part of the deal. So we're going to put on this 10% tariff on another $300 billion worth of goods, which are all basically discretionary consumer items. So technology, laptops, phones, most of the stuff that you buy, we're going to be impacted by these tariffs. Didn't take long before Walmart, Target, Apple, others started calling the White House saying, are you crazy? We're going into the Christmas shopping season where we're going to make the bulk of our profits for this year, and you're raising prices on all those products at the worst possible time, so we get a delay of those tariffs. What did we get in return? Nothing. Haven't even heard a word from China. So over the weekend, the reason the markets are up today is because, well, we're hopeful to get a trade deal, and we're going to extend the ability for companies to sell stuff to Huawei for another 90 days. Where does 90 days get us? September, October, November gets us into December, basically, past the holiday shopping season. You know, right? Because Black Friday, that's the big one. So the problem here is really twofold. One is that we've now gotten ourselves into a position to where we have to give in order to support economic growth. And China's known this all along. It was only a function of time until the issue of tariffs weighed enough on the U.S. economy that became an electionary threat. And we talked about this last year. It says this is a terrible time to be doing this. You don't launch tariffs at the end of an economic cycle because you don't have the ability to consume higher prices, right? People are living paycheck to paycheck. So it's a horrible time to do this. And you're doing it at a time where it's going to impact your reelection process, right? Because again, people vote with their pocketbook. If they're not happy about things when they get to the electoral poll, the electoral ballot box, well, they're going to vote for somebody else. Other than the fact that, you know, we ran the Crypt Keeper in 2008 against a young JFK-ish, you know, candidate. It was the fact that the markets were in a massive financial crisis that led to the election of Barack Obama as president. The threat, and China knows this. See, the biggest risk to Trump and the biggest negotiating strength that China has is to do nothing. They simply wait at this point. The tariffs are already there, right? We still have the tariffs that we launched in 2018. Those just went to 25% in June. Those really haven't come through the system yet. We won't start seeing those really until October. But the tariffs are already there. They're already impacting economic growth. We can see it in trade. We can see it in transportation. We can see it in commodity prices. Those tariffs are there. All China has to do now is just sit and wait and let the pot come to a boil over the next few months heading into the election, and they'll have all the negotiating power they need to negotiate a trade deal. Here's how this trade deal ends, by the way. The trade deal will end, and we'll basically be back to exactly where we were when we started this whole thing in January of 2018. Be right back after the break.
Lance Roberts' blog. It's required reading for the informed investor. Catch it today on LanceRobertsShow.com.
Speaking of how money works and how to make the most out of Social Security, we do lunch and learns here at our office. And on September 4th, that's the Wednesday, at 12 o'clock, we're doing Social Security basic rules and claiming strategies. This is one of the more seminal, basic, but important lunch and learns, because all we focus on are those basic rules and claiming strategies for Social Security. So if you're thinking about taking Social Security, or you're a couple of years away, whatever it is, we provide lunch. Just go to realinvestmentadvice.com, check out the events calendar, and sign up.
And welcome back at 6:48. As we get ready to wrap up the show this morning, get you on your way to work, as the sun is coming up. It's coming up slowly, surely. So
burning through the fog and murk.
Yeah. So my daughter's, you know, she's running track, so she has to get up very early in the morning to go run track. She's running both JV and varsity this year, so they've got her doubled up.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, she's doing very well. And but she has to get up very early. She's got to get down to the track, you know, in the mornings. Mm-hmm. They go do their cross-country runs, you know, 4 or 5 miles in the morning.
Right.
And so my wife was talking to her on Friday about that. Well, it's almost that time of the year where we fall back. Right? And we get to pick up an hour of sleep.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
My favorite day of the year.
Exactly. It's supposed to everybody's favorite day of the
That's
year.
That's right.
And so, last night we were going to bed, and you know, it was getting pretty late, and it was about 9:30. She's ready to go. She goes, "Do we fall back tonight?" I was like, "No,
not yet,
not yet." She's like, "Oh man,
hey, did that make it through the legislature to be on the ballot in November? Do you know?"
You know, I don't know. I knew it was there.
Yeah.
Maybe Russell knows. Russell, do you know? From Paul and those guys?
Oh, Russell.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I know they were trying to get on the ballot to move Texas to
one
not,
way or the other.
Well, yeah, we were
just,
gonna
just leave it alone, but well, one way or the other.
The goal was to take us off of daylight savings time.
Right, right.
So we'd be like Arizona.
Yeah.
I'm all for leaving it on because
I'm fine with it.
You know, honestly, I love the whole fall
just
fallback
leave the
thing.
Freaking change. You don't make us change ever again.
Exactly. But no, I like, you know, honestly, look, I like the shift.
Sure.
I like the fact that, you know, I pick up an hour of sleep somewhere along the way, and I like the longer daylight during the summer. So,
well,
you know,
I don't mind going to bed in the daylight.
Yeah, it doesn't bother
what
me.
I do mind is flipping the thing twice a year.
It messes up my whole clocks.
Oh, yeah.
You gotta go around the whole house.
My dog's confused for weeks.
So yeah, I don't know if that made it through the legislature or not.
Russell, that's your homework assignment. If you would please find out
five,
for
10,
us.
4.
Yeah.
So just for the break, we're talking a little bit about trade. What's going on? Look, I mean, the bottom line of this is that trade is difficult. When we're working with all these, you know, different countries, you've got different things going on. The most important thing to understand about trade is that this isn't the 1980s anymore. You know, we're a very flat, interconnected world. Things happen very quickly. You know, impacts in one area as quickly translate to other areas. And so this is not a simple game. When you start increasing prices in one area, they've got to go up in other areas. You know, so costs are going up faster than the rate of wage growth. Real inflation for individuals is much higher than what government statistics actually lay out there. And, of course, this is – you know, when we take a look at the financial stability of most Americans, it's okay. It's not fantastic. They're living pretty much paycheck to paycheck. And so we've got to, you know, realize that small incremental changes can have a very big effect. So, you know, trade is difficult, and trade is something that, you know, has a lot of impacts in a lot of very unexpected areas. And Trump's figuring this out. This is why he's, you know, it's like, okay, we'll just increase, we'll put 10% tariff on all these products. And all of a sudden he gets phone calls from all these companies saying, hey, wait a minute, we got Christmas coming up. You know, you can't do that right now. Wait till after Christmas and then do it, right? And so this is, this is the problem with kind of, you know, fly by the seat of your pants policy, which is you throw stuff out there thinking that you'll get an immediate response. Well, you do, but it's not the response you were expecting. And that's because of the fact that we are so now internationally integrated around the world. You know, we've got manufacturing and on-time shipments and the ability to get stuff from point A to point B literally overnight in a lot of cases. This has reduced the amount of inventory. And it's much more efficient, right? You know, it used to be back in the day, back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, we had to stockpile massive inventories because it would take weeks to get stuff in. And now you can get stuff shipped literally to you. Oh, I'm short of product. Oh, well, I can get that part overnight, and you have it shipped over. And so being able to get things so quickly, being able to go online and track inventory and have stuff delivered, you know, with great expediency has led to larger reduced inventories. That's an oxymoron.
Inventories are more reduced.
Yes. There we go. We have less inventory.
Yes.
Requirements than we used to.
Yes. Yes. We have no bananas.
Yes. But those are the issues. And this is why trade has such a big impact on things. So just pay attention to this. We're not out of the woods. Yes, the markets are bouncing today on optimistic hopes. But more importantly, the markets are bouncing today simply because of the fact that we were oversold. And again, we had talked about this last week and why we had laid on some long positions in our trading account simply because we were oversold. We're going to get a bounce. Markets don't go straight down. They don't go straight up. You know, there's what they call volatility, right? They move up and down. But, you know, as the media, we have to assign something to it. Why did the markets go up today? Well, because of X. That's not necessarily the case. Maybe that was a trigger. maybe that's what, you know, spewed the algorithms to go do something. But really, in most cases, headlines really aren't driving what's going on in the markets as much as we want to attribute to them. But again, pay attention to trade, because this is kind of the big issue coming up over the course of the next, you know, few months. This is going to be the thing that has the biggest impact. That increase in tariffs back in June, we're going to start to see those effects. We're already seeing quite a few companies starting to announce the problems when they report earnings. They say, you know, our earnings were X, but they would have been better had it not been for tariffs. And we're seeing a lot more of that. So again, now with increased tariffs again, the ones that went up to 25% in June, those are going to start to show up in the third quarter earnings reports when we start getting those in starting in October. So again, those are issues. These are things we're going to pay attention to. Outside of that, you know, there's not a lot going on. You know, economically, we're kind of just humming along. Everything's fine. One of the bigger concerns, though, is something that we've talked about here for a while, which is twofold, is this corporate debt issue. Corporate debt is now at record levels. And we've talked about the problem with a lot of this debt is that it's what's called covenant light. In other words, it's kind of the subprime mortgage of corporate debt. It's debt that was issued to companies with risky balance sheets on expectations that they'd be able to work their way out of it. And the problem is they haven't. And a lot of those companies that we talked about that were taking out kind of these covenant light loans were oil and gas companies. There were a lot of companies taking out a lot of debt to go drill with. And the expectation was, hey, you loan me money, I'm going to go drill these wells. I'm going to make a bunch of money drilling these wells, and I'll be able to pay back the loans. And so the whole shell drilling, you know, kind of phenomenon that was going on, banks were more than eager. They were sloshing around liquidity. They were willing to take the risk on issuing these bonds out to these kind of low-quality energy producers. And now, of course, not surprisingly, because oil prices have fallen and they have continued to really remain range bound in the 50s, which is not profitable for a lot of these smaller companies, we're now starting to see a rise of bankruptcies. So according to a new report from Haynes and Boone, bankruptcies in the upstream sector are increasing this year as energy spot prices remain subdued and there's a cyclical downshift in the overall economy. So far, 26 exploration and production E&P firms have filed for bankruptcy through mid-August, with debts totaling about $10.96 billion. The firm noticed a surge in bankruptcies beginning in May following the 23% correction in West Texas Intermediate crude prices from April to June. So, again, you know, a lot of the bets made in the oil and gas sector were that this shale drilling was going to create higher prices and people would be able to produce their way out of you know, basically sub-quality debt, and it didn't happen. In 2018, 28 S&P firms filed for bankruptcy, posting $13.2 billion in debt. 24 firms asked for protection in 2017 with $8.5 billion in debt. And so the Haynes and Boone is now pointing out that insolvency and the energy patch are now gaining momentum. And this is what we talked about being the big risk for, particularly in the energy sector. And there's a real issue here, ultimately, with MLPs, which are these master limited partnerships that were spun off by a lot of these companies. You know, I'm a company and I've got cash flow and I've got pipelines and I'm shipping stuff through my pipeline. Well, to unlock the value of that pipeline, I spin that off as a limited partnership and make it its own entity. Well, the one thing that a lot of these companies are going to wind up doing is pulling that MLP back into the company to capture those cash flows, particularly if they get into financial straits. And we're going to potentially see an uptick in that. So make sure you really understand what you own and where you own it, because there's a real risk that if you overpaid for that asset, and most people overpaid for their MLPs, there's a finite amount of revenue that can go through a pipeline, and a lot of people are playing, you know, huge multiples of that potential revenue stream. So if you overpaid for it and that thing gets sucked back into the company, you're going to wind up losing a good bit of money. So this is one of the issues. And again, when we take a look at some of these companies, these are, you know, a lot of these companies are companies that you've never heard of, right? You know, Destiny Oil and Gas, Weatherly, Jones Energy, 7S Oil and Gas. I mean, there's smaller companies. But we are starting to see some uptick in some of these areas where we're starting to see larger companies kind of getting pulled in as well. So if oil prices remain low and continue to remain low for a while, and a recession will exacerbate this issue in the energy patch, we'll start to see that bankruptcy risk start to flow up the curve into bigger companies. So understand what you own. Make sure you understand the risk you're taking. But the energy sector is at risk currently, and it's something that's very important to the state of Texas in particular, because we have a lot of jobs tied to the energy sector. So, again, pay attention to what's happening there, because it has a bigger impact on the overall economy as well. Wraps up the show today. We'll be back tomorrow with the next edition of the Lance Roberts Show right here at realinvestmentadvice.com. Get by our website today. Our new newsletter is out. Click the newsletter tab for understanding what the yield curve is and what it's saying about the economy. Also, our report on trade out today as well at realinvestmentadvice.com. Have a great day. Enjoy it. And we'll be back tomorrow for the next edition of the Lance Roberts Show right here, realinvestmentadvice.com. While the things have to care.